Chapter 1. Miscalculation or Miracle?
Y'all are thirsty,
our server drawled as she refilled our glasses in the Mammoth Hotel dining room. You must have been out skiing today. That we had. An over-snow shuttle had dropped my family, my mom, dad, younger brother Matt, and me, off on the side of the groomed and packed snow road that morning. An 18-year-old from the Midwest, I'd never skied. I was not an athlete or even an outdoorsy person. Yet there I was, alone in the wintry woods, relying on my family and our skis to make it back to civilization. As I watched the shuttle lumber away from that isolated place, the sound of its retreating motor muffled by January's thick blanket of snow, the weight of the wilderness settled on my soul. We set off through silent, frosted forest, our trail at first following the Gardner River, then winding around the base of Bunsen Peak, propelling across flat, open spaces, and pushing ourselves up slopes. We learned how to cross-country ski along the way. Dad had taught himself when he and Mom had come to Yellowstone without Matt and me the previous winter. Matt, like Dad, picked up the rhythms and techniques naturally. Neither Mom nor I were graced with the genetics for athleticism, or even balance. Yet here we were with them. Or maybe they were there with us, hoisting us up when we pitched sideways on the flats or toppled backwards on slight inclines. Be careful, a man on the shuttle told us when he heard our destination. Someone died on that trail earlier this season. I could see how. When we finally got across the flats, the trail slipped into a slim opening between the trees, revealing a series of steep switchbacks. Matt, true to his "how hard can it be" approach to life, disappeared from view, confident he could learn on the way down. Dad coached Mom and me about how to descend the precipitous drop. I didn't want to do it, but this was the only way back. Even if we decided we could go no farther and return to the trailhead, the shuttle wasn't coming through again until the next day. So I made my way down, one cautious, clumsy, gravity-fighting move at a time. My skis took turns I didn't mean to take and moved faster than I wanted to go. And I worried I would become the season's second fatality on that trail. Like Matt, Dad took the descent with relative ease. Mom, who insisted the rest of us go first, left the safety of the top only because the thought of the family stranded overnight in the wilderness was worse than attempting the slope. Like me, she fell on every switchback. And on every one, Dad hauled himself back up the trail to rescue her. Our server was right. We had been out skiing. We'd faced the wilderness and made it back alive. I hurt everywhere. But uncharacteristically, I didn't mind. Something in me had shifted.
Maybe you should apply for a job out here this summer, Dad said after our server stepped away.
You like Yellowstone. You're good with people. You know enough about the park to be helpful. I think you'd enjoy it. I scanned the dining room. The wait staff was busy, but they weren't simply shuttling food from kitchen to table. Most were standing, relaxed and smiling, deep in conversation with their customers. I pictured myself in the scene, clad in the requisite beige skirt, shirt, and vest, with a maroon paisley ascot around my neck. Neither uniforms nor waiting tables had ever interested me, but Dad was right. I liked Yellowstone. I liked helping people. I probably would enjoy it. A few days later, we headed home, alive and intact, with an application for summer employment in my backpack. By March, I'd been offered a contract to work in the housekeeping department at Lake Lodge. Both the position and the location were second choices.
housekeeping because I wanted to be with park visitors, not alone in their empty rooms. And Lake because it wasn't Old Faithful. Second choices or not, the job was in Yellowstone, so I signed. We returned at the end of May, arriving at the east entrance 2 days after my high school graduation. We paid our $20 fee for the week and entered the park. From there, we took the steadily climbing road to Sylvan Pass, more than 1,500 feet above. Faced with the unnerving experience of hurtling over a mountain highway perched on pylons, Mom clutched the door handle as tightly as the pavement clung to the mountainside. Eventually, the curves, drop-offs, and sweeping panoramas got to her, reviving her dormant motion sickness at the same moment Dad pointed out a large, dark mammal outlined against the vibrant spring verdure. "Look, it's a moose," he exclaimed. Such sightings were rare for our family, as are exclamations from my dad. Still, he pulled over and waited. After Mom regained her composure, he said, "I hate to be indelicate, but would you mind going back to look at that moose?" Dad drove to a turnout and stopped. There, now partially hidden among the vegetation, stood a moose, placidly going about the business of filling its stomach. Tall, dark, and gangly in comparison to the small, delicate, deer-like creature I expect to see, moose are magnificent. Still, something about them is inexplicably impossible-looking, as though they'd been fashioned from spare bits and pieces. Placid and impossible-looking or not, moose are not only fast runners and proficient swimmers, they can be territorial and are solid enough to derail a train. As with all of Yellowstone's animals, they're wild. It's not only best for them to be observed from a distance, it's best for us, too. Mom wasn't the only one with a queasy stomach. Mine, though, had nothing to do with the road. Yellowstone was 1,000 miles from home. I wasn't sure I was ready. 4 hours, 85 miles, and a handful of stops later, we pulled up in front of the employment center for my 1 o'clock appointment. I got out of our maroon station wagon, waved to Mom, Dad, and Matt, crossed the parking lot, and entered a building as drab as the dining room staff's uniforms. Inside, I presented my contract to the woman behind the counter. She looked at it and frowned, then opened a heavy black binder, its pages dog-eared and ragged, and its cover cracked and flaking. "That's what I thought," she muttered to herself. Then to me, "Lake Lodge housekeeping is full. We overhire because we get a lot of no-shows." With that, she turned toward a woman standing among the rows of file cabinets deep in the room. "This girl is here to work housekeeping at Lake Lodge, and it's full." Watching them confer, I worried about what that meant for me. We'd driven an awfully long way to discover I didn't have a job because of a hiring miscalculation. The woman returned to the counter and rifled through the binder again. "We can reassign you, if you'd be willing to work as a gift shop cashier at the Old Faithful Inn. The pay is $3.50, 10 cents an hour less than housekeeping." I wasn't there for the money. I was there to experience the things that made Yellowstone, Yellowstone. After the deductions for room and board, my check wouldn't amount to much anyway. I'd wanted to work in the gift shop at the Old Faithful Inn, but I'd been happy enough to settle for housekeeping at Lake Lodge, a place I'd never even seen. Interaction with park visitors and living in the Old Faithful area was worth far more than the $4 extra a week I would earn cleaning empty rooms at a different location. This wasn't a miscalculation. It was a gift, maybe even a miracle. Elated, I signed a new contract and floated back to my waiting family, two beige uniforms clutched to my chest.